Hello and welcome back to Big Mouth, where we prorogue the P-funk out of pop culture. Or something, sorry. I'm Sian Paddington and Andrew Harrison is on holiday, so we've only got a few more days to jam open the back door and get his really posh speakers out. Don't tell anyone. Right, let's meet our guests. He's a huge Dylan fan, a Word magazine veteran, and occasional obituarist, I believe, for The Times. Hello, James Med, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I hear you wrote the Freddie Starr obituary and that was a lot of fun.
I did, yeah, quite a few years ago. Although I think he'd only committed a few other heinous crimes since I wrote it. That was a bit of a model, I think, that 60s thing where they start out as a singer.
Yes.
Do the comedy routines and then become an appalling drug addict and domestic abuser in the 70s and 80s.
Fine. Was Hamster anywhere near the title or the byline?
It was obviously the lead, as I believe you journalists call it, yeah.
Yes. That is obviously, as you say, a model for obituary writing. What's the hardest obituary to write? She said morbidly.
The worst is when it's someone whose partner is the famous person.
Ah.
Because you are writing to entertain your audience and it's just a bit offensive really because you're writing about things that they attended.
Right, yes. Yeah. They are the wing person to the life. You say that the eds are really hard on you when you write obituaries.
Yeah, well, I'm a magazine person, so I find newspaper editors sub-editing probably, more specifically, vicious beyond belief, yeah.
Okay.
The obituary thing is brutal because it is lives as entertainment. So you do think, wow, you can't do that. What about their dignity? Obviously not in the case of Freddie Starr, but
yes,
in the case of other people.
You're too sensitive. One of my favourite obituaries ever, this obviously sounds like a completely different show, but quickly, is the writer Sylvia Smith, whose Telegraph obituary starts, Sylvia Smith, who has died aged 67, was a retired secretary living in a Leytonstone bedsit. She became an unlikely literary celebrity with the publication of Misadventures, the first book of three, chronicling a totally unremarkable life. And it goes on and on and on, and it's wonderful. She is the most boring literary star that we've ever had, but her obituary is a gem. I would go and seek that out. Also, you're a big Bob Dylan fan. Have you been watching Rolling Thunder Review on repeat?
No, I haven't. I did enjoy
it,
but I am really one of the boring people who haven't put their head above the parapet and said they'd rather have seen the real thing rather than the made-up version.
Right.
I think Bob Dylan's life is exciting enough. Although it was amazing. But Martin Scorsese did the original 60s one without making up some otherwise quite good, funny stories.
Yeah.
I'd have really loved to see that.
Okay.
But the life stuff, I mean, God, it makes me even realise I was born too late.
Oh.
I mean, I got drunk Bob Dylan in the Wembley Arena. It's really unfair.
It's a way to put it. Our other guest is a veteran of the glory days of Smash It, Yay! Select, Observer, even Vogue. She's now writer and broadcaster for Radio 4 and many, many others. Her book, Out of Time, looks at the process of middle age. Nothing to do with us here. When you've grown up in a culture that tells you to keep on raving. Are we all living in a wild delusion? I mean, round this table, not you. It's Miranda Sawyer. Hello, Miranda.
Hiya.
You're a podcast boffin.
Yes, boffin is my word. Yes.
How many podcasts do you have to get through a week?
Well, at least, five at least. It's
really?
Minimal. Yeah, so yeah. I have a column at The Observer and I do radio as well, but podcasts are slightly more interesting at the moment.
Mm.
And so I have a main copy, body of copy, and that one might have one or possibly two in there, and then I have a little section of three at the bottom, which can be anything. So I've done things like sports podcasts presented by women, or three shows that had Stormzy in, those kind of things. You can kind of pick what you like, which is nice because you can cover things that maybe wouldn't deserve a massive review, but just point people in the way.
Which I think are the podcasts I like.
Yeah,
I was
the little funny ones.
Yeah, talking to you earlier about Everything Is Alive,
which
is an American podcast which interviews inanimate objects.
Yeah.
And is 20 minutes long and is wonderful.
So good. Actually, I like that one so big, so much that it was my main review.
Okay,
yeah,
yes.
It's really funny. I really recommend that one.
When you've turned this one off, listeners, go listen to Everything Is Alive. It's brilliant. You recently also interviewed Shane Meadows.
I did.
About his Channel 4 series. And that interview made me cry, Miranda. It was amazing.
Made me cry when we were actually doing the interview.
He seemed to come prepared with something to tell you, Shane.
And he did, yes. So it was a very odd situation because I've interviewed Shane a couple of times and I really like him. And the publicists keep saying, he really wants to talk to you. He really wants to talk to you. And I was like, okay, fine. Turned up expecting to talk about The Virtues, which is quite a heavy series, but, you know, quite a lot
about of Shane. Child abuse and the childhood in Ireland.
It's about finding your life in... And Stevie Graham is the main character and he's absolutely brilliant in it. It's a great series. I really recommend it. But so I expected to talk about that. And then he had a kind of, not a confession to make, but something he wanted to tell me about, which was essentially that he had been sexually abused as a child quite seriously on one occasion, and it completely derailed his life, but he had deliberately forgotten it. So he'd very deliberately decided to forget this and didn't know that it had ever happened. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable, but it does happen. And it was only through a very specific type of therapy that he then located the fact that it had happened, and The Virtues kind of came out of that. So obviously I wasn't expecting this at all, and I'm not a qualified psychotherapist, so it was quite difficult, but it was an amazing experience, and it was kind of quite an honour to be able to make it into a piece.
Mm-hmm. Incredible read. I would go back because it's on the Guardian archives, and listen, we could talk about all this stuff all day, but let's not. We've got a show to do. This week, If It Bleeds, It Leads, Prosthetics Ahoy with the Loudest Voice on Sky, the tale of Roger Ailes and the creation of right-wing 24-hour news behemoth. I can never say that word. Fox News. It stars Russell Crowe as a mighty, fat-suited hamster cheat Ailes himself, an actual behemoth, with Sienna Miller as his wife Beth, who is similarly prosthetically mega-chinned and generous of beak. Underneath the masks, does the beating heart of a drama about the rights and wrongs of corporate media America exist, or will it fail to set in the fridge? We also have French movie Shock of the Future, starring Alma Jodorowsky as Anna, a fictional and extremely lithe tech pioneer in 1978 Paris, making forward-thinking electronica with all the latest gizmos, as they say on the left bank. Is it Delia Derbyshire for Air fans? We'll also be looking at The Catcher, the new BBC drama about living in a post-truth world. Can you trust CCTV, British Army soldiers, the cops and the lawyers? Plus, Metronomy. They've got a new album out. It's called Metronomy Forever. Is it Delia Derbyshire for forward-thinking hot chip fans? Plus, in the extra bit for Patreon subscribers, we have When Actors Play Real People, who are the worst and the best depictions of the actually alive or just carked it. Our guests will reveal more. You can get this extra bit and have access to all of them if you subscribe via Patreon each month. For a paltry fiver, you can buy us a notional, symbolic and entirely totemic pint of beer to cover our bills and keep the show going. If you pledge us 2 pints a month, you get a miraculous big mouth mug into which you can pour your pint. Pick soon on our Twitter pages. You can go to patreon.com/bigmouthpodcast to find out more. The link is also at the top of the Facebook page and in our Twitter bio and Instagram. All we're saying is buy us a pint. Right, let's start with some law and order. The Catcher is BBC's latest crime and snogging drama, Move Over the Bodyguard, which stars the wonderfully named Holiday Granger as Detective Rachel Carey and Callum Turner as Sean Emery, recent army soldier, a man with a mysterious past. This is a cat and mouse tale with CCTV at the heart of the plot. But does it deliver? Or does it drop everything off in a nearby bin? We're going to listen to the trailer.
I always feel like somebody's watching me.
You're under suspicion for assault and kidnapping.
I'm being set up! I'm doing it!
Got him on target on foot.
The police think I've done it, my ex thinks I've done it, and between me and you, there are moments when I'm scared that I've done it.
I always feel like somebody's watching me. Ah! Who's playing tricks on me?
Just tell us where she is, Sean.
If you knew what was at stake, you would walk away and pretend this never happened.
Brother's watching us.
Not just watching.
I'm so tired of believing people.
While you're watching everybody else, don't ever assume there isn't somebody watching you.
The Catcher there. James, You're like a guy who likes detective stuff. Set this up for us.
Yeah, I do on TV. I mean, it is interesting. I would never read a whodunit book, which must be the most best-selling books in the world. bore me to death.
Yes.
But I do watch them on TV, largely because that's what most of TV is, isn't it?
A lot of it, James,
yeah,
yes.
And this is an amazing cast. I think Holiday Granger is brilliant actor. I think Callum Turner is really good. I don't know him as well as I know her. And it looked really promising. It's hot topics, surveillance. There's inevitably a woman is the victim, which is... I'm sick of TV programmes about violence generally, but particularly against women. We probably won't get into that. Was it good? It was okay.
Is it going to be reviewed okay if you like that kind of thing? This is my standard review.
But it is that. It is another one of those things.
Is making it okay?
The thing it reminded me of was Collateral. Did you see that one?
Yes.
Which had another brilliant actor, Carey Mulligan.
Yes.
This woman is even... Her surname is Carey, worryingly. Mm-hmm. And she was almost insulted by that. I think it was written by David Hare. It was...
You're right.
Really awful. Mm. And that feeling that by the end of this series, I'm going to feel I've wasted my time. I have that feeling.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? But if you think about things like Collateral or The Bodyguard, those kind of things. So they have, I think, what's quite difficult about telly in general nowadays is that you've got to kind of cut through, haven't you? So you've got to have something that's pretty punchy, pretty exciting, very relevant, or it doesn't get commissioned. Mm. And something like, say, The Bodyguard, which started off absolutely brilliantly, it just went nuts. It went absolutely nuts. And I don't have the faith in this series that it won't go nuts itself, because if you're making a BBC series like this, you're kind of competing against all the stuff you can binge watch on Netflix or anything else. And so at the end of every episode, you've got to have like a big twist or something that's going to keep you going. So it kind of gets more and more ludicrous. There's a thing that also that it did at the very beginning, which I really slightly object to, and they did it with The Bodyguard as well, which is a kind of setup of a situation where it's not really going in the right way. So in the Bodyguard, it was somebody was in a toilet with a bomb on them, and in this one, it was the main character walking into a situation where they need to get information out of a young kid, right? And the thing I kind of object to, but I understand why it's done, is that you have to have this kind of slightly kind of, this is the hero, and the hero cuts to the chase and will tell you how to do this. Mm. And it's such a kind of old trope. Everybody's Columbo, you know, like the main character that you have to root for is the really super clever one that sees under the surface.
It's the hero's journey, Greek narrative.
Yeah, and it's... I think I'm a bit sick of it.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, they did have one good thing, which was that she was... It was a woman who was the ruthlessly ambitious one. Mm. You think she could... Her main aim is to succeed in her career, and women aren't often allowed to do that on BBC One whodunits. But other than that, I did think... And I've watched the second episode last night.
Yeah.
I'm already feeling...
You're fatigued, aren't you?
I am. I am. It's quite annoying. There is too much competition, and for this, I would. And also, the ironic thing is, I would rather watch Lewis or Endeavour or Vera.
Yes,
where it's going to be tied up each week in 2 hours, and I can have my tea,
and not worry about it. This is
hitting a big valley between that and something really and The Wire. Yes, I'm 50, but. That kind of sagging bit in the middle where you think I'm slightly wasting my time here.
Now, the programme, as you're saying, it's a bit on trend because it's talking about CCTV culture, surveillance, data, what is used against us. It's also talking about facial recognition. This is the BBC trying very, very hard.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? There was a news story today that I, you know, just saw on Twitter, which is that if you wanted to find anything around, I don't know, benefits and things like that, you have to log on to a site called gov.uk.
Yes.
And it's just been revealed that actually Boris Johnson and his cohorts want to harvest all that data in a Facebook style, in order to find out, you know, in order to obviously offer us better services, but also actually to find out who's using it, and kind of then I would imagine kind of target.
Yes, take this quiz about how poor you are.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Okay. And yes. So I do think, you know, the BBC's quite good at that. They do try very hard to be relevant. It's how you use that, and it's sometimes quite hard to use it in a dramatic way, I think.
In a way, I mean, I would argue that BBC tries too hard. Mm. And the 70s BBC, where they could do what the hell they liked at a whim, produced great TV, and I'm not sure that the BBC in the position they're in are going to produce as much great TV.
Do you think they need to be wilder?
Yeah. Mm. And there's no wildness. I mean, at least 50% wild. 50%.
Yeah, they need to be nutty. The,
yeah. there isn't, I mean, to use the word I hate the most, creativity in the BBC. It's been a bit shut down, I think.
Yeah. Get a bit of catching up to do.
Yeah. So for any listeners who haven't seen this, we have the lead detective who has been fast-tracked, and we're told this every 10 minutes that she's been fast-tracked.
Yeah, and
there's a lot of pictures of CCTV cameras everywhere. You know, when there's another scene, suddenly we cut to the CCTV. Yeah, we get the idea. But she's also someone who has privilege, and we have Sean Emery, who is the ex-army soldier, who is on appeal and gets through the appeal, who is working class. His grandfather is a cabbie. We see working class men. I think there is a class issue underneath this, but I'm also not that happy about it, because the women are upper class and they're seen as careerist and cold. And we have the main character, Rachel Carey, who is a cold character. She needs to be heated up by these men who are, you know, so swarthy. And I think there is that underneath it, which made me feel, could you not have a careerist who isn't cold, who isn't upper class, who's a woman just trying to do her job?
Yeah.
That I found that quite problematic.
Right. It's one-dimensional, isn't it? You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's very true. In most situations, you know, women have jobs. Of course they have jobs. You know, I mean, I'm not being funny about it. We all have it pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, the workplace is 50-50. Men work, women work. Mm. That's the nature of of life. And yes, you can really like your career, or you can just have a job. I mean, why not like a bit of both? You know, you could work really hard and it just be a job, and work really hard and it be a career, and not let it kind of affect your personality so much.
Yes, and I think it's also true for the barrister. Seems to be very upper class. The barrister who goes missing, who is played by the wonderfully Laura Haddock.
if only we could actually have a drama that you. It was called Laura.
Yes, Ms. Haddock.
Haddock and Holiday Granger. Yeah. It's just wasted giving them another.
They're the best. They're the best part of it. The real people behind it. And so again, we're enforced. This upper class women have jobs because they get a nanny to look after the children or whatever they do, and that men are working class and rough. It reminded me in some ways of Hunted. One of the characters, if you watch Channel 4's Hunted, it's a really good programme. One of the characters reminds me of the main boss who goes through surveillance. It's about surveillance and CCTV to find all these poor little tykes that are running around the country trying not to be found. And I think they've stolen a lot from that too. But again, he's like a cabbie. He's a working class bloke. He's taken the piss out of the posh girls who are being fast-tracked. You know, again, it keeps being banged home.
It's interesting, isn't it? I find, you know, we're going to talk quite a lot about, you know, telly this week and films and stuff. And sometimes with television and films, not all of them, obviously, there's different ones, but there are such tropes all the way through that you don't even recognise them. You get given them so often that you just see them over and over and say, oh, that's what life is. And it isn't really like that. And I wish sometimes that things would change a little, you know. That's why, you know, series like, say, Top Boy, which we were talking about off air, weren't we, that's coming back, that's actually based very, very definitely on real people's lives. And those kind of, like, more... when characters have lots, they kind of are more equal rather than one being posh and one but not. You know, those things make more sense.
Yes, colour-coded characters we get sometimes. Also, these people in real life, let's be boring, they work in teams. There isn't one person going, I'm going to solve this
maverick.
Murder.
The maverick is my head.
Who comes in. And this is a trope that we're so used to, and the BBC is, I think, why you're saying it's mediocre to talk for you, James Med, is that...
Please, women's blame me.
Yeah, it's the tropes. We're just seeing tropes, aren't we? We're seeing nothing that's cracking open that egg as such.
So actually you're seeing a woman, but it's a bloke.
It is. And they've cast it...
And he is Columbo.
For all the wrong reasons. Mm. They've said this needs to be a woman. Mm. And I fell for it.
Well, she's got the great name. She's a good actor. You know, what do you expect?
They introduce a lot of characters later on, because I was looking up looking up the internet. Ron Perlman is in.
He's just appeared.
Oh, has he? I haven't seen that one. Two. And he's literally wonderful. I was hoping he was going to perk it up.
But hilariously, they just... The last thing is, here's Ron Perlman.
There you go. See what I mean? It's like tune in next week.
It is.
Oh, OK. As a kind of just a star vehicle. He rolls on and rolls off.
There seems to be the assumption that you know who Ron Perlman is. It's complete. It's like fourth wall breaking.
Right, OK. Also, just have to say, it's really Caucasian. Sorry to get the PC stuff in. It's really white.
I love the PC stuff, man. Get it in.
It's really white.
She has got a
and very
black
actress-y.
Assistant, hasn't she?
Yeah, but yeah. That's what I mean. She's
the assistant.
But everything is...
White
yeah.
saviour. No,
and look, she's been to RADA. Anyway, apart from all that, will anyone be watching any more?
It's a funny time as well. It's on, you know, given that it's on a Tuesday night. I kind of think when people have, when the BBC have real faith in it, they whack it out on a Sunday night, don't they? So it's like a middling one.
A middling one, yeah.
I mean, I definitely would have watched it despite this, because I think the cast looks great. I don't know that I will, no.
Okay.
I might well not.
I might just look at the plot when it's finished and just see what the storyline was.
Synopsis.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like that. Yeah. But then I have to watch a lot of TV.
Right all along.
Yeah, romantic me. Okay, right, let's dive into the past. Yay. 1978, 10 years after the riots at the Sorbonne, when hairy blokes sat in front of electronic equipment, smoking cigs and farting, and Paris was full of people in flares and no CCTV. Shock of the Future is directed by Marc Collin, in from out of Nouvelle Vague. This is the story of reluctant jingle writer Anna, who is played by Alma Jodorowsky, who in real life is the granddaughter of Alejandro, which I can't say. This film is a day in the life of a proto-tech pioneer whose calling is to make electronica like her heroes. It's out at selected cinemas nationwide from Friday, and we thought this is up our street, so we've watched it. To get us into the spirit, we're going to have a bit of music. This is French disco star Corinne, who has a cameo appearance with Marche Nocturne. De ce qu'on devine, et toute seule dans le noir, tu marches tard le soir, les lumières bleues du bar éclairent le trottoir. Des caresses dans le cou, alors tu fais l'amour, et c'est le garde à vous. La folie de ton jeu, elle se lit dans tes yeux. Take that, Maroda. Miranda. We see our main protagonist, Anna, get up in the morning, and it is literally a day in the life. I think her first words are, turn the shit music off, or something like that.
She hits her digital alarm.
Was this film up your street?
Oh, yes, I really liked this film. And the reason why I liked it was because, although it's only filmed in one place, which is understandable, it's a first-time, low-budget film, I liked how it tried to represent something that is really, really difficult, which is the creative process. So it's literally, you know, most of the creative process is not how we see on film. It's people just sitting down and thinking, oh, God, this is rubbish. I'll just try it again. Maybe I'll walk over here. I'll have a banana. This will make a difference. And there's an element of that that I really like. It helps that the main character is very, very beautiful. And, there's something about that that I quite like. It's she's really great to look at, and when she's making the music, it's kind of fun. And I like the fact that the characters come in, and the men that come in are just a bit rubbish. I mean, they're okay, but they are a bit rubbish. And there's a really brilliant kind of speech about halfway through, where she's trying to explain to this older guy the impact of hearing the music of Sheffield. And it's just great. She does this really brilliant speech in French, where she basically predicts the whole of electronic music, that we're going to be, you know, outdoors listening to electronic music. We're going to feel the vibrations through us, and maybe there'll be something like a spaceship in the middle and playing. And I just thought, oh my God, this has to be sampled on a track. This is just amazing. She's like, you know, predicting the future, which is obviously slightly silly, but there's something so wonderful about it that I was almost kind of moved. And the music that she plays is really good. And there's a great little scene where an English guy comes in and he speaks French with his very English accent and plays her loads of records.
Yes,
and
yes.
I just like the, that's how people used to get music. He came round, he played her records.
Yeah, yeah.
She played her one. She was like, this is rubbish. It's really rock. It's
she too, doesn't like Suicide, 50s. Does she? Yeah. Doesn't like Alan Vega.
What is this? And she just, it's just really funny. Mm. I loved it. Mm. I really, really like it.
James, what were your views?
Yeah, I agree. I did really enjoy it. I mean, she is preposterously beautiful, but she was also really natural.
Yeah,
I totally believed this, even the slightly crazy French speaking. And I like the style. I mean, the notes for the film were really interesting, the badly translated notes, because the guy said that there's a big Jean-Luc Godard poster on the wall, so you think this is, and he's Nouvelle Vague, you think this is obviously Nouvelle Vague influenced. And he says, no, it's not at all. I've never seen any of this. It totally is. I mean, all that sitting around talking. Jean-Paul Belmondo had walked in.
Yeah.
And it would have totally fitted in. But, yeah, it was really great. I mean, the aesthetics, I think, were the thing I liked the most. Her sitting there, putting her enormous glasses on.
Aren't they wonderful, the glasses?
I love the way she had to put her glasses on to work the synthesizers.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see the synthesizers, isn't it? Obviously everybody, you know, nowadays, if you make music, you have a little laptop or whatever. And it's just this kind of wall in an apartment of big, old, clunky machines that people have to, you know, somebody has to come around
to
and mend
unplug,
them.
You have to do the patches, don't you? There's lots and lots of leads and wires everywhere, which is really good.
And there's a really brilliant moment where it all goes wrong. She's got this idea and she hits a synth and no noise comes out and she has to get somebody around.
It's not synchronised.
Yeah, I love it. I really liked it.
Apparently, at someone's real flat, he just had to move the CDs.
Wow.
To make it 1978.
You should Airbnb that. Oh, sorry.
Miranda, let's be romantic about it. Let's just go there. I like the fact that one of the main characters in the film is the Roland CR-78. It's the main plot character, crucial plot device. It's the Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, that's the one.
It comes in. She gets it for free. It's worth a grand, apparently, and it transforms the way she writes music. And that is so true to life.
$3,000.
Oh, was it three? Mm. Sorry. That tech is what informs music rather than what's coming through your personality or your pain.
Innovations in life generally is somebody gets given some tech and they don't quite use it how they're meant to.
Yeah.
That's like the kind of, you know, the history of the 20th century into the 21st century, that you get given tech and it gets put out to people and there's innovators like in this film that use it in an odd way, but and then it kind of punts out to the normal punter. It gets used even more interesting way, I think, but it's always that somebody gets given some tech and they think, oh yeah, I could try this.
And art is made from mistakes, as we well know, and failure. Yeah. And she makes a mistake, she can't use it at one point. Are there any other films that you've seen recently that are like this? I was trying to think, well, let's think about context. I don't think I've seen a film like this for a long time.
I have been watching a lot of Nouvelle Vague films.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of them have appeared on the streaming services, and it's very like that.
Right. With a female protagonist?
No, the female is usually the secondary character, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's usually, you know, sitting around.
And from reading the film notes, I think this character started out as a man. And Mark said, no, it's much more interesting if we make it a woman. Also, there's enormous nods to Daphne Oram, Delia Derbyshire, Elaine Radigue, Wendy Carlos. I mean, there's... We know that there's a whole thing to be mined in that these women haven't been represented properly before.
And I quite like the fact that the kind of tedious French, not just French, I have to say, but the kind of sexist attitude towards women does come out. Mm. And I quite like the way she just deals with it. She's just
You keep expecting that to become a real issue because every single one of them comes in and hits on her. And every single one of them is unbelievably seedy, including the one who's meant to be nice at the end, I thought.
Yeah.
The lawyer. But she totally deals with them.
Yeah, in the way that she would have to.
Yeah.
It isn't a lie to say that the music business for a very, very long time was entirely male dominated. And, you know, you would know that even as a female journalist, you would arrive on... you know, on a tour or whatever, and you would, you know, other than probably the PR, that you were pretty much the only woman there.
Yeah.
And so you were always batting all this rubbish off, really, even with kind of enlightened kind of artistic men. It was always kind of, there's a bit of a question around it. And I really like the fact that she just goes, world know. Yeah. This is just absolutely ridiculous. And they go, oh, yeah, sorry.
And there's a main goal in the film. The main goal is to get a record contract. Yeah. And it doesn't work out the way you want to, but it's not a big deal. And it's like, yes, I just thought it's really important.
It was a good speech, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was quite surprised that that was the end conclusion. Mm. That you just keep going.
Yeah.
And isn't it nice to you may be getting this off the Nouvelle Vague, you know, kind of crush that you're having at the moment, but that thing where I like films that allow you in a bit. I get slightly sick of being led by the nose all the time. And, you know, it's an amazing thing to be led by the nose in big films and stuff. But I quite like films that let me in a little bit easier so I can have an opinion about it or think about it or relate it to something else. That it doesn't, you know, there's ambiguity around. I don't like to be told exactly how I'm meant to feel all the time. And this is nice for that. You know,
it's not signposting all the time.
Not at all. And it's a relief.
Yeah. Realism is obviously a fantasy, but that sort of idea of realism, that film realism, it is pretty refreshing. I mean, if you compare it to the thing we were just talking about, The Capture, like you say, you've got some, you feel like you're just spying on people.
Yeah, it's less constructed, isn't it? And also, they smoke masses of cigarettes.
Oh, I've just thought of something slightly reminded me of. It's not the same. Have you seen that Joanna Hogg film that's out now called The Souvenir Part 1?
No, but it's on the list.
Yes, okay, I agree, so that is completely constructed. Mm. I mean, literally, the flat that they're in is, I've seen it, it's a set. Mm-hmm. And it's completely constructed. It is so real, it's spooky. The male character in it, I kept thinking, is he acting?
Or they were totally improvised, isn't it?
Yeah,
it must be.
They're told where they need to go. But the female character is played by somebody who isn't an actor, but weirdly is Tilda Swinton's daughter, but isn't an actor. And then the male character is an actor. But I kept thinking, I think I've met you. Who are you? Like, it was so spooky in its realness. And there's an element of that. I just enjoy films.
Well, when we have the Disney, Marvel, Fox franchises, the big, big movies, this is what will happen. We will get the more underground,
the
more naturalistic.
As long as they do, I really have a fear.
No, there's always
underground.
Yeah, better be.
So this is on at selected indie cinemas, art house cinemas, I think they're called. Go and see it. Go and see it because it needs lots and lots of support. It will be on streaming at some point, but we're recommending it, aren't we?
We are.
Totally. Yes. Right, let's have a track from one of our guests. Miranda Sawyer, what have you brought in for us and why?
I have brought in, I'm going to sound like this terrible kind of 50-something trying to be hip, man, but it is a rapper, and his name is YBN Cordae. And the reason why I have brought him in is I have to, because I have a nearly 14-year-old son, listen to a lot of grime and a lot of rap, and that is fine by me. Actually, I quite like grime, and I am less of a fan of the American rap that he listened to. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he played this track and I was like, oh, what is this? Mm. I love it. And it was a track by YBN Cordae and Anderson .Paak. And it's just hilarious. It reminds me of kind of ODB. It's like a party track. It's ridiculous. Right. It's really great. We're not going to play that one. We're going to play Broke As F.
Yeah.
But it's another thing that's got a really great hook.
Can I?
Okay, so Broke As Fuck. It's like, it's another one that's got a good hook, but also, what is interesting is YBN Cordae is part of a collective called YBN, which is Young Broke N-Word, right? And these kids got together. He's the oldest one. He's about 30, and he had a rapping career. But these kids got together via playing computer games. So they were playing like Grand Theft Auto, and they were playing it like one was in Alabama, one was somewhere else, and they met online playing computer games.
Wow.
And then one of them, when he was about 12, 13, started rapping live while they were while they were playing computer games, and they became this kind of little collective. And then now they've all moved to LA and they're having hits, some of which I don't really like, but I really like Cordae. I have to say, I would really recommend his album. It's called The Lost Boy. It only came out, like, I don't know, a month or two ago. Mm-hmm. But I love the fact that, you know, people are always really snotty about computer games and this is terrible and why don't people like music? And they do. They just meet people in a different way. Mm-hmm. And there's something very inspiring about that. And not all the music is going to be for you, but I would recommend this album. I think it's really good.
Wonderful. Okay, this is Broke As Fuck by YBN Cordae.
You'll see some childhood memories mixed with the cells of a dime. You'll see the doctor smack my ass when I first fell on my mom. A magic school bus adventure trip inside my cerebrum. Back when I told niggas I'll make you sweat, they didn't believe them. Flashback to brass tracks and we was playing no problems. We was cranking all the classics from the spring to the autumn. Then I said, motherfuck, need a bad bitch
with a tummy tuck. How I make a million from a dollar, it was dummy luck. Need a new lamb, no sedan, fuck a Hummer truck. I'm aiming for the top, I'm steady climbing, fuck a run. I was broke as fuck, down on pull my ass, had the lowest luck. Used to ride the bike up to the store, I need a Rover truck, a Billy Coop.
Sometimes described as Kylie meets Aphex Twin. Not sure about that though. Metronomy is back with their sixth studio album, Metronomy Forever. Famed for indie emo bangers, good name for a burger van. Is this a dance floor smash or is it sad and lonely because them's the times we're living in? Does head guy Joe, son of Peggy Mount, have a new vision since the last album? And since he's worked with sad banger Vixen Robin, let's listen to a little bit of Salted Caramel. Take me to Funky Town. James, I believe you're a Metronomy kind of guy.
Do you?
Yeah, you said you were, didn't you, in an email?
I think they're weird.
I'm intrigued. Tell us about it.
I am intrigued by him. What's the one that you always see on TV? The look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked some of this.
Mm-hmm. What were you expecting, first off?
I was pretty much expecting this, but without all the little synthy experimental bits in between, which may boost it up to, what, 18 tracks or whatever. Yeah, I thought it reminded me of when you go round to someone you know from work or someone who's a partner of someone you know from work, and they do some music, and they say, you're a music journalist, and they play you your stuff, and you end up being quite surprised by how good it is and thinking or even making the mistake of saying, this could be like a real record.
Yeah.
It's like that, but I feel...
Whoa, you are vicious, man.
Sorry.
But you say it in such a lovely, so soft way.
What it is overridingly glib. I didn't understand why...
Yeah.
I couldn't see any reason why he was making music.
That's mean. I'd like to stick up for him a little bit.
I will say I like two of the tracks.
Yes, two tracks did you like, James?
I like Sex Emoji, which is like Damon Albarn jamming with 10cc on drugs, probably.
Oh, with Prince, I thought, in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he thinks that.
Okay.
And upset my girlfriend because it was a good joke.
Right.
I think I liked it a little bit more than you did. Mm. And the reason why I liked it is because it slightly reminded me of a particular era of music that I liked, which was a kind of post-punk-y, synthy type music. And the actual sounds, I think, wouldn't have been out of place in kind of 1984, really.
Right.
The sounds were quite familiar to me. So when you hear it and you hear the kind of... The kind of synthy bass leads and things like that, you think, do I know this? And it felt very relaxing, familiar. I kept thinking of the or something like that. You think, oh yes, I know this. But I would say there's something about it that I kind of wanted the lyrics to be a little bit better. But I enjoyed it. I do think it's funny because, you know, we're playing Salted Caramel, and I think Salted Caramel is absolutely of the now, isn't it? Like, you know, it didn't really exist like 3 years ago. And if you took out Salted Caramel and put it with Viennetta or something, then it would have been of the then. You know,
right.
the sounds are quite old-fashioned, which is fine by me. It's really, really fine. But it's only the lyrics, and they're a little bit off, I think, that make it now.
Right, I see. I thought a lot of it sounded like Daft Punk. Was I wrong there? In when they do their soft, yeah, sort of indie less, sort of style.
It's, well, it's less bangy.
Yes, actually. It's sort of indie music for people who might dance at the party, but a bit later when they probably had half more glass of wine.
Yeah,
it's quite polite, but yes, I found it really enjoyable. But it's one of those records that I played it two or three times. So I'm really enjoying this. Good. There's a couple of really good things. Sex Emoji is great because it's so weird. I like it when they go weird.
When they go a bit off.
But I thought I'm not going to play this next week. I'm going to forget it exists. I just know that it's going to get on my nerves after.
You're kind of saying what I said. Yeah. It's just nicer.
Do you think there's a destined? Do you think it's destined slightly for adverts?
Well,
yes.
I mean, which is, means he's very clever.
He is. He's, what he does is he thinks Salted Caramel. That's a good song, and then he writes a really good riff because he's clearly really musically talented.
Yeah, very much.
In a way that you know.
That your mates. Friend.
It might be, but probably wouldn't come up with such a good riff. And then someone overplays the bass line, and,
right?
You know, and there's it doesn't go anywhere. Each song doesn't go anywhere. Sex Emoji is the best one because he starts pissing around.
Yeah, yeah, I see. Is this the new indie dance crossover?
Yeah. Well,
is this where James were and the Stone Roses were? Do you think has got that?
Do you know how old he is?
He's 36, I think.
Yeah.
Why? Do you think it sounds like he should have made it when
he should
24?
Be 22, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, so you think maybe that's it?
I mean, I'm really surprised. I was really surprised. Mm. He's the same age as Hot Chip.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I found really, again, weird.
A lot of the album is also about weddings, and I read a couple of interviews.
Is he getting married?
Yeah. No, he's been married. It's about whether he'd be invited to a wedding. It gets quite convoluted, but I thought maybe, I'm going with Miranda's point, is maybe he thinks, well, there's the wedding show in Earl's Court. Maybe they play it in the background. And maybe there's probably a sort of holiday advert I could get
Guy's
in for like couples
buck,
and things.
Yeah,
fair enough. Then maybe there's
maybe
underlying
he just
cynicism.
Wants to play weddings.
Maybe. If anyone knows the Hot Chip, how would it relate to something like that? The latest Hot Chip is Bath Full of Ecstasy is out, and obviously they have a big audience, a big swathe of sad dads who want to still bang away, as it were.
I mean, it's less bangy, isn't it? I think there are certain bands, and you've mentioned two of them, Hot Chip and Daft Punk, that you can rely on them for the bangers, can't you? And this is less bangy, and I wouldn't say suffers from that. I think, I mean, I worry for it that it would be used in the background. Mm. But then that means it's kind of slightly ideal for adverts, actually, because adverts want great tracks but that aren't going to completely take over.
Mm-hmm.
So it is slightly backgroundy, which I don't know, makes me sound like I didn't like it. I did like it.
Yeah.
It's just maybe I didn't like it enough.
Yes. There's a song called Insecurity he wrote after working with Robin, which I wanted to skip that very, very quickly. It's very loud and I didn't really care about him being insecure.
Yes, that's the problem.
And
that's
maybe there's
I mean
a warmth.
The lyrics.
There's
a problem.
About,
okay, if you're 36 and you have been married and you go into a lot of weddings, I understand that it might mess you up. But, you know, speaking as somebody who's, you know, I mean, I'm knocking like 20 years older. You get over that, mate.
Yeah.
Really? It's not, those are not the important things about life. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Nobody's talking about you. You can talk to whoever you like. You know,
fine.
Don't be insecure.
Okay.
Get on with it.
So we say to Joe, maybe have some therapy and come back next year and see what we've got. The tunes,
The thing I would want to hear what he does. I would want to hear his next record.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do think that it's almost frustrating. I think that's kind of my reaction. Is that he's just laid down a few demos and released them.
Yeah, I
like
see.
My mate.
Like your mate.
Your mate at the dinner party.
Yeah. I want to go around your mate's house now and see, go through the record collection and say, okay, fine. All right, okay. Okay, let's have a bit more music that we can relax to. James Med, it's your turn. What have you got for us?
I brought in what must be close to being what we used to call an oldie now. It's Aldous Harding's album from, I think, April.
That's a long time ago.
I thought this was going to be, you know, Joanna Newsom, Saturday periodical, huge. And it doesn't seem to have erupted as much. I think it's so good. Her last album was really a little bit too intense for me, but I liked it. And then this album came along and it's all slightly weird, really beautifully arranged, kind of, I guess I'd call it folk rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's fascinating and I've been listening to it pretty much constantly since April. So
that
why
is a
fight
recommendation.
It?
Let's do it. Aldous Harding, Weight of the Planets. Had Succession about a media dynasty? Why not Roger Ailes and his assault on broadcast news? Fox News was a trailblazer, targeting middle America. Unafraid to be populist, political, shocking, un-PC and unapologetic, Roger Ailes was a titan in TV. Indeed, he looks like an enormous titan, hired by Murdoch. But does this make for good viewing? Power, money, sex. And is everyone making Citizen Kane for our times? Let's listen to the trailer for The Loudest Voice.
Television is the most powerful force in the world. We're gonna give them a vision of the world the way it really is. And the way they want it to be. If we can do that, then they will never change the channel. People don't want to be informed. They want to feel informed.
Is Rupert really as brilliant as they say?
He hired me, didn't he?
This is no time for politics.
It's war.
Anyone outside Fox is the enemy, and we do not talk about what we do.
I spoke with the president. We'd like your help moving forward.
Whatever you need, Carl. Fox News will back him.
The Loudest Voice on Sky there, starring Russell Crowe as an enormous, prosthetically enhanced behemoth of TV. Miranda, the first scenes we see are him being fired from CNN and giving an enormous speech to employees that look like they like him. I don't know if this was the case. What did you think of the first episode of The Loudest Voice?
Okay, so it is very engaging in quite a basic way. So Russell Crowe is... he's a big character to kind of full stop, and he plays those big characters very well. You know, he is quite often in real life the loudest voice in the room, so he's a kind of perfect casting. I have a bit of a problem with the whole series, right? So I have a bit of a problem with it because, as we all know, Roger Ailes was basically accused of kind of awful sexual harassment. And by, you know, 20 women, lots and lots of women later on, and it happened during this time. So what this series is doing is taking a man that kind of dominated television and saying, actually, OK, he was multifaceted. So we have to like him at the beginning. So the whole of the first episode seems to me to be saying, we like this guy. We like him. He's a maverick. He's walking away. There's things about him that we, you know, that seem a bit dodgy, but actually we like him, because you have to set up, you have to like him before you can... unpick him. And I have, it's slightly what we were talking about before, he's treated like a hero. So all the bits at the beginning, and I'm not saying that it's not brilliantly acted, it's that it's not engaging, but he's treated like a hero, the maverick hero that's moved from this, that's a bit ahead
again
of
he's
people.
Columbo, isn't he?
Yeah,
hello.
All this. Yeah. And I just got a bit of a problem with that, because, you know, that's, if you treat those guys in real life and on film like maverick heroes, they get to cut those swathes, they get to do it. Mm-hmm. And by presenting him like that, I have no doubt that, you know, they will show his downfall as well. But by presenting him like that in the beginning, you are kind of excusing him all the way through. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, people are complicated. We get that. But that idea of a lone maverick hopping around and teaching everybody how to do it properly. Yes. I'm kind of sick of that, because that's why we've ended up in the political situation that we have now. And I'm not really interested in it being justified. Sorry.
James Med, did you have the same severe reaction to this episode?
Not as severe, no, but it is what I think. I just enjoyed it more.
you know, that's the problem. It's really hard because it's enjoyable, it's, and that's what you know. There's something about a maverick, of course, that's amazing, and something about a dominant character that, of course, is seductive. These people win through their charisma.
But I felt what they were doing was they were putting. It was like a war movie, wasn't it? It was the plot of a war movie, and he was the amassing his forces, and he was the leader, regardless of his morals. I mean, the thing that stood out to me as a discussion is the fact that Rupert Murdoch was portrayed as a great liberal. And I mean, I've worked for Rupert, you know, I have worked for the Times. But
that he is not a great liberal.
He is a great liberal.
But they love it in America. They love people, you know, they like, you know, it's the kind of justification of capitalism, isn't it? You know, individualism.
Cutting through all the
Well, it's the I see through the bullshit stuff, but actually they bring their own bullshit into the office.
People who say it's just business.
It's just business. Why let's ignore the regulations. And you can see, you literally can see it in the political situation we are in now. Like, why bother?
Is it justifying that though? I don't know, I find it quite hard to take
these things out of context, really, because this is the story that we have been given. This is the story that almost, I mean, I know he's gonna, you know, it won't, he won't be justified in the end, and you know, great, but I'm slightly sick of maverick men cutting a swathe with their illiberal and brilliant attitudes, because I think it's slightly leading us to where we are now.
Right. Okay. What I found amusing about the first episode is that Russell Crowe is in every scene almost.
There you go.
And he waddles because of all this fat suit stuff he's got. He's waddling
but
like
that's
this.
That's biopic acting, isn't
like
it?
Like inverted Father Christmas, going and blessing people with his great wisdom and his great no bullshit strategy. And he is sort of sainting, you know, the saint coming in.
Also Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe as an actor pretty much quite often wants to do that. If they got Russell Crowe to do this television series,
he's got to be in every scene, waddling around.
He will have contributed to the dialogue. He will have done this. He will have done that. And, you know, he is a great actor. Don't get me wrong. But he's the similar kind of person. That's why he was cast.
He's a great actor. He's a greater ego, though. Yes, that is true. Yes, that must be true. And he's such a ham. I mean, he does overdo it, even his character. Mm.
Now, Sienna Miller... Did anyone recognise her at first?
No,
I had to go
really
and double check.
And I was looking for her because she was in the.
Yes. She's a great actor that's been really, really badly served, I think. Mm-hmm. She's really, really good. But because of the kind of, you know, inverted commas, tabloid scandals that engulfed her in her life, that she was almost like too well known as a person for people to cast her. Yeah. She's really good, I think.
Yeah. I'm still very old fashioned and I find it difficult when people put on the fat suit or put on the extra nose. I think, couldn't you have found an ugly actor? Couldn't you have found a fat actor instead of making it a star vehicle? Now, they get a star vehicle, so they get money.
There's three of them, because Rupert Murdoch is Simon McBurney.
Yes.
Yeah, who's pretty familiar too.
Yeah.
And I could recognise his voice through the plastic.
Yeah, his particular voice,
And he looks like he's talking through a mask. I mean, it's really good makeup.
Yes.
And I'm sure they'll win awards.
But what I'm thinking is, look, they're going, can we win some awards? It's Emmy, isn't it? Every scene is, what will we get the Emmy for in this one? Should we get it for the set dressing? Should we get it for
the
mask?
It's just ego. It's like, it's too meta for me. I can't cope.
Well, it's also quite weird that it's being shown on Sky Atlantic, isn't it? Alongside Succession.
Yes. Yeah.
So have we unpicked Murdoch enough? Can we move on?
I mean, is that a sort of ego thing as well?
That's like when you have a lot of restaurants that serve in the same cuisine, the same street, supportive, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's also history, isn't it? So the people who write things or who commission things are interested in that time. So they're interested in something happening in the 90s and how that now plays out now, because they are of that age.
Mm-hmm. Now, film has done this sort of, not specifically Fox News, but it's done about TV is bad. Nightcrawler, one of my favourite films, is about network TV, and if it bleeds, it leads. Network, even, is part of that. There's still a narrative, there's still a trope, that TV is bad. We see drama after drama, even if it's on TV, that TV is a source. They can't touch politics. Politics is far too powerful. But we're still seeing the same message, is that people who watch TV are stupid and they will be dominated by these big fat people.
That's because the people who commission television quite often think that the viewers are stupid.
I know, but isn't that sad?
Every single person I've met who works in TV, and I do live in West London.
so you're surrounded.
Watches about a quarter as much TV as I do.
Right. Yeah.
That's what Bob Mortimer said. Obviously, I love Bob Mortimer. Everybody loves Bob Mortimer, who's suddenly become everybody's favourite. And I listened to a couple of interviews, podcast interviews with him, and he says that basically he writes with Vic Reeves in the morning, and then he goes home and he watches telly, and he watches all sorts of telly, absolutely loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of telly, and he loves it. And he knows, because he gets things commissioned, that the people who commission it do not watch telly. They don't watch the telly that he watches, which is something like Naked and Afraid, where you get dropped in a jungle and like have no clothes on. So, you know, nobody watches that. Nobody who makes telly watches it. So they're only interested in telly that's like this, which is essentially a film cut up.
So I'd like to see a programme about TV not being awful for you and not rotting your brain and not treating you like a stupid
person.
Well,
that's the royal
When's
family.
When's that going to happen?
Do you think it's because we were,
and Gogglebox.
Were we all told that when we were growing up? You watch too much TV.
And I say to my son, oh, the funny thing is, we were told don't watch too much TV because it will do something actual to your brain. And now they say that about video games.
Exactly.
So carry on playing.
That's why I never tell video games. Doesn't matter. To stop watching a screen.
Yeah. It's only a screen.
I'm a lazy parent.
I think a lot of this drama is based on Gabrielle Sherman's 2014 biography, Loudest Voice in the Room. So I think they feel that they've got a big data set to draw from.
Yeah,
they're
totally.
Going to use this. However, I still think it's following the same old pattern. And I think it's... I don't know if I want to watch him become the bad guy, because I think I know he's going to in however
it's hard,
many
isn't it?
Episodes.
But that's what I mean about being, it being something that you feel... It's a little bit like you feel like you've seen it before.
And
you,
I agree.
You know those people. There they are.
Yeah.
One is a president and one is a prime minister. You've seen them. There you go.
Yeah. And he's set
great.
Up
We're
as...
We're living through it.
Yeah, he's set up as this slightly avuncular character at the start, and you just know it's going to go wrong. Do you want to see it go wrong?
The interesting thing is why anyone set up Fox News, and we've seen that.
There are other stories, I think, that are interesting. Now, there is a film called Bombshell coming out with Margot Robbie, Nicole Kidman and Charlize Theron, which is about the same thing, but it stars the three women. Now,
that's
what we're interested in.
Yes, two women, and there is a composite character who is some of the women who gave their testimonies.
That's what I'm interested in. Yeah. I'm not interested in this one.
I think that's...
Much as I love the fat suit.
That's our Little Father Christmas, and it should be coming out December or maybe January in this country. Will anyone be watching the whole of this series, she asked stupidly?
Well, yeah, loads. I mean, it is entertaining.
I will, yeah.
It's entertaining afraid, and it's fun. I'm just... Please.
Fair dues. All right, we're coming towards the end of the show, which means closing time chatter. What will our guests be discussing over a ricard at the local bistro as they get outbid for a Roland CR78 by Jean-Michel Jarre on eBay? James Med.
Well, more TV from
Yay.
Me. And an excuse to talk about Succession, which I know you covered before, but is the greatest thing on TV by miles at the moment.
Totally.
The opening credits of it are fantastic. I mean, say so much in such a great way by using faked up home video or home Super 8, whatever it is. And I noticed that because you see on Netflix that the new skip intro button.
Yes.
Which, when you're watching old comedy programmes, is fantastically useful because they are the worst things, the most suicide-inducing things in the world, including a piece of... bit of Fry and Laurie onwards. And I feel like people have upped their game or got out. Because the other thing that's great on TV at the moment is Stath Let's Flat. It's about 2 seconds long intro. So I think that's just an interesting artistic phenomenon.
And also the wonderful thing about Succession titles, which we didn't say on the show and I meant to, is they're alphabetical. There's no main star. All the actors are listed alphabetically, and you just think, yes, this is the kind of show then that's going to invite me in. Really important as well. Yeah.
Oh,
yes. Films, as you know, used to have in the 30s and 40s all the titles at the front because they know people would have left. They just say the end at the left.
The end.
And that's it. And then you go out of the cinema. And so I like it all up front because obviously people
and
who are streaming
are
very beautiful, not watching.
Aren't they? In the olden films,
well, film
are very
credits
gorgeous.
Were brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. And also the music motif, you get all of the music and then you hear it going through the show.
Yeah.
So. The music the playing
wires,
a character
the wires,
in that way.
You know, you mentioned The Wire, but The Wire's opening credits, they were always really different. You saw it in your head.
More opening credits. It's obviously language for this is a good programme when they're good. Yeah. Miranda.
Okay, well, I should do. I'm doing a podcast, and seeing as how that's what I listen to.
Always. Yay!
So this is a podcast that I think people may have heard, or they may have not. But it's literally called "Have You Heard George's Podcast?" Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's from George the Poet, and it came out. I mean, a long time ago, almost a year ago, and they came out, and they caused no furore at all, and. I have to admit that they passed me by. I didn't hear them. They weren't really promoted. And then at the British Podcast Awards, of which I was a kind of patron, it was hilarious. The show organiser sent me this spreadsheet of the winners. And I was like, how can he have won all of these? Like, he'd won, like, fiction. He'd won, like, you know, he'd come really close and political and all this kind of stuff. And then, basically, if you listen to all these podcasts, you know why. Because what he does is he's a poet. So when you're listening to the podcasts, it goes through lots of different kind of ways of presenting information and emotion to you. So he's brilliant at analysing music. He starts talking, and then after a while you think, oh my goodness, it's actually a poem. And then he also does kind of drama. He dramatizes, does a kind of thing around Grenfell. It's really, really innovative, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have never listened to anything like this before. Anyway, so it won. It did absolutely brilliantly at the Podcast Awards, and it was just great. You know, it won Podcast of the Year, quite rightly. It won about 7 other awards. Anyway, now, the reason why I bring it up now is the BBC have decided to basically to broadcast it again. Mm-hmm. So it's coming out on Radio 4. You'll be able to access them. And I find it quite interesting that despite the fact that podcasts are incredibly important and lots of people listen to them, there's something about going on to Radio 4 that means it will get a massively bigger audience, which is obviously very important. And the new series that he's done will come out on Radio 4 as well. So I kind of... I suppose I bring it up because I want everyone to listen to it, but also to say that actually it's still quite interesting because a lot of people still just have the radio on in the background. Mm. They have Six Music going, or they have a bit of Five Live, or they have Radio in or Radio 4, and it just ticks over in the background. Mm. And to put it on there is quite important for certain people, and I really hope that lots of people listen to it.
Yeah, I listen to some of it, and it's amazing when he goes into rhyme, because it's not always rhyme, he goes into poetry. You just stop what you're doing. It breaks something up, but then it brings something else to it.
And it's beautifully produced, isn't it? Like,
yes.
It's produced like a record. It's really, really good if you
so
listen to it.
So it keeps your attention, you know, constantly, because it's moving and changing in tone.
Yeah, it's great.
Wonderful. Well done, George the Poet, as if you need it from us. There you go.
Anyway, we love
well
you.
Done.
Well
yes,
done.
Well we love done. You. We love you. I'm going to do, for my closing time chatter, Brexit playing cards. It had to happen. Nigel Farage is the Ace of Spades. Yeah. If Brexit is a disaster, I will go and live abroad, says the quote at the bottom
Who
of the card.
Who is the Queen of Hearts?
Who's the Queen of Hearts? Oh, Miranda. Where we go? Is Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Oh,
I'm not an advocate of withdrawal from the EU, but instead I want a fundamental renegotiation of terms, he says.
Oh, my God, I'm getting hot, aren't you?
Boris is the ace of, what's that, clubs. Brexit means Brexit. Wonderful. I mean, very funny. And indeed, you can play the game shithead, I think, quite well with these. cards. Funnily enough, my mate over the road, across my road, does these cards. They are from BrexitMostWanted.com. If you want some, they are very, very good and funny. So they have cheered me up this week.
Oh, and what's that on the back?
Oh, yes. Say what's on the back,
Miranda. So on the back, there is a passport, basically, yes. That says a European Union, ye oldie style passport that we still have.
So it looks like passports at the back. Yes. Very good. Okay. That's it. That's the end of the show. Thanks to our special guest, Miranda Sawyer and James Medd. Thanks to producer Alex Rees. And don't forget, you can hear all our past episodes, if you're completely insane, at audioboom.com/bigmouth. Although I know people do go back and listen to them slightly randomly, which I quite like. If you want to support the show, please do. And you can buy us that virtual pint via patreon.com/bigmouthpodcast. Playing out today is my choice of tune, because I don't usually get to choose one. I have been listening to that Lana Del Rey album, Let's Go Mainstream. I mean... All
really
day,
good?
Every day. It's really good. Oh. She is the new Bobby Gentry. It's beautiful. The lyrics are absolutely fantastic. She is subverting every single genre and stereotype as she goes along. It's clever, clever stuff. It's also called Norman fucking Rockwell with an exclamation mark. You could call an album that. It's wonderful. So this is a cover of Sublime's hit Doing Time, which was from 1996, in Lana Del Rey style. Bye. Thank you.
my time, and the living's easy. Rallies on the microphone with Ross MG. All the people in the dance will agree that we're well qualified to represent the LBC. Me and Louis, we gonna run to the party and dance to the rhythm. It gets harder. All the people in the dance will agree that